Oh, yeah, and once again, we're back. It's the one, the only Joey Nugs, and you're tuned in to episode number 15 of Nugs Country Wrestling Podcast. Tonight's guest will be the Man Scout, Jake Manning. Really looking forward to this interview tonight. Going to talk to Jake Manning about his life in pro wrestling. He's also working as a stand-up comedian. We'll talk to him about his adventures at WrestleMania as well as WrestleCon. This is somebody that I've always loved his character, the Man Scout, a grown man that works as a Boy Scout and as a great wrestling character. And that's one of the things I think is missing in wrestling today is characters. I mean, when he goes out there, either as a good guy or a bad guy, the character of the Man Scout is a great character. And I'll be honest, I've seen him before do the Man Scout quite a few times. And I'll tell you honestly, he's one of the few wrestlers that I would like to manage if given a chance. I think the Man Scout gimmick character as a heel would be phenomenal to work. I could see him going out there and really getting some big heat. But then again, he is a wrestler that if you see him at any of his posts on social media, he tells everyone that he is under for life. He is a glorified enhancement wrestler. I don't like calling people jobbers. I mean, but he is everybody when in pro wrestling, someone gets paid to make the other wrestler look good. And I mean, that's both wrestlers, but someone gets paid to do the job. Someone's paid to put their shoulders to the mat, and he does it with style and grace. And I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to this interview tonight. It ought to be phenomenal. The Man Scout, Jake Manning, is going to be episode 15 of Nugs Country Wrestling Podcast. And by the way, tonight I am flying solo. My partner in crime, Big Country, is busy in the world of professional wrestling and life. People get busy and sometimes can't make the show. I mean, it happens to the best of us. Not holding against the brother. I'm sure he'll be back next week and everything will be copacetic. He contacted me and just let me know, Nugs, I can't do the show. I said, no problem, brother. I'll fly it solo. Take care of your business, man. Keep it in the road. Everything is lovely. So it's good. It's good.
Special rest in peace to the best dog on earth, Jake. You were a great friend, a family member. You were like a kid to parents, and you will be greatly missed. Shout-outs to Zach Salvation, Timber, and the rest of all of our loyal listeners. You people out there, if you haven't listened to our show, I mean, you'll probably listen right now for the first time, but that's cool. But you can listen to all of our shows. They're downloadable for free on iTunes. Search Nugs Country Wrestling Podcast. You can find them on iTunes. You can go on Blog Talk Radio directly and listen to them streaming on the internet. I mean, they're just out there. So listen to the show. Tell a friend. Tell somebody. Tune in every week. It's a great thing. Even if you don't hear us live, the playback is always there. The archives are there. And we're becoming more popular by the week. And I want to say shout out to all of our loyal listeners out there. I want to thank all the wrestlers over the years that have taken the time to not over the years, over this year, over the past 15 episodes, and have been on here and been so candid and straightforward and shared all their experiences. So I want to thank all those wrestlers out there. And we're going to continue on here. Tonight, my rant, pissed off and mad about it, is parents, grandparents, guardians, etc. You need to be a great example to your children. Today I was in a store and I heard, I guess it was a grandmother, old lady. She was angry, pissed off at the world. And she was screaming at a young little girl. This little girl looked maybe tops 5-6 years old. And they told the kid to go get a drink. So the little kid went over, pulled a soda out of the case. And grandma started screaming at the kid, not that one, don't get that soda, that's the wrong one. The truth is, grandma wanted a soda and was going to steal the kid's soda, you know what I mean? Well, sometimes it's just so damn cheap that they won't come out of their pocket and they're going to steal their grandkid's soda. So, I mean, here's the truth is,
if you're going to be somebody, be an example for your kids. Quit being idiots out there. I mean, screaming at your child doesn't make any sense. I mean, maybe a lot of things in the past what we did were stupid, you know, and I know maybe sometimes people were raised that way, but you don't need to scream at a child. I mean, you could talk to a child. They're human, you know, especially someone that's 5 or 6 years old. They understand. They're not a baby. I mean, they understand when you tell them not that drink, go get this other flavor. I mean, it's not complicated. But don't scream at your children. It just doesn't make any sense. So that's what I'm talking about. So be a better parent, you know. Anybody in the world, I mean, could be a parent, you know. But, you know, be a good mother. Be a good father. Be a grandmother. Be a good grandfather. Be a good aunt. Whoever's taken on the role of guardian for a child, be a decent stand-up person, you know. Don't get drunk around the kid. Be decent. I mean, spend time with the kid. Be a good influence around children. You know, they are our future. And I ain't trying to be Whitney Houston, but they are our future. Treat them right and let them lead the... I didn't think I was going to sing today, but I did. So I just had to get my song on right there. But that's the truth. Also, what else is going on in the world today? WrestleMania weekend. I'm going to tell you, I watched WrestleMania on the network, and I can truly tell you that $9.95 a month that I'm spending is well worth it. I'm getting to see everything that you could imagine wrestling, and this is one of the better WrestleManias that I've seen in a long time. The Hell in a Cell match was bonkers. The Undertaker versus the Prodigal Son himself, Shane O'Mac. I'm telling you, that was a great, great match. I mean, he jumped off the top of the cage. Man, I tell you, that's the one that gave me goosebumps. That was a great match. The women's match, phenomenal. And I'm happy to say I could truly say, death to the butterfly. The Divas division is no more. They got rid of that shitty-ass freaking butterfly crappy belt. I'm going to tell you something. I don't care if it was Vince McMahon directly. Whoever created that freaking stupid Divas division sent pro wrestling back for women's wrestling the years. The Fabulous Moolah must be rolling over in her grave to see that butterfly. So I'm tired. I'm glad they got rid of that. With the women's division doing as great as it is now in WWE, it's phenomenal to see that they're stepping up. And they awarded Charlotte, that's Ric Flair's daughter. She won the three-way match, and they awarded her the new women's title. I'll be honest with you. I looked at the belt. It's red. It's a red background, white belt, and it looks like the WWE heavyweight title, but girlified. I don't know who come up with these logos with the big W. Now, I understand, I mean, they're pushing their brand, but it's pro wrestling. I mean, stop pushing the brand. Push a title. Actually have a title belt that looks like a belt, not just a big W. It looks so clank. I mean, or if you're afraid that people are going to take your titles and put stickers on them and use them in the indies, I mean, that's one thing, but... What's with the big W? That is an ugly title. You need to change the look of the title. I mean, but did see some good things in pro wrestling, you know, that made me definitely want to come back, you know, and continue to watch WWE. But I'm going to tell you, WWE is good, but right now what I'm enjoying more than anything is Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground is just doing some phenomenal things. It's old school. It has that old school feel where they build up a character over weeks, a month, up to bring this guy, and they show the video vignette, make it dark and make it look eerie, you know, and build up a wrestling character before they show up. And by the time the wrestling character actually shows up, they know who he is. I mean, how do you expect people to get a pop in pro wrestling if you bring them down a ramp, even if it's WWE, and you think that they're going to be over? And nobody knows who they are. It takes a while to get somebody over. The crowd's got to make a connection with them to get them over. And they have something at Lucha Underground. They're producing it as a television show, not just a brand. I mean, it looks good. And it's dark. It's grainy. It's got an edge to it. It's got phenomenal wrestling with all the luchadors and the Mexican AAA stuff. And they got it on the money. And I'm telling you, it's really exciting to watch Lucha Underground. If you haven't watched it, you need to go check it out. And I'm looking forward to it. I've seen on Google, because I'm constantly looking at everything, that they're supposed to be doing the first two seasons. So I'm really looking forward to see it on Netflix. I subscribe to Netflix every month, and you can stream it on Netflix on any media device. So that would be awesome. I'm looking forward to that. You know, so to see the first two seasons. I guess there was just two seasons. Maybe it's three. I'm not sure. But, I mean, they're doing some phenomenal thing. It's high-flying. They basically took the best of AAA wrestling, the luchador high-flying style, brought it to America and put it on the network, and it looks phenomenal. And I'm telling you, it'll give you goosebumps if you watch it. Seen a video promo. Danny Trio was on there, and put it over big, and he was sitting in the crowd and put on the Lucha Underground mask with the logo on the side. Really made the company look good. I mean, they have Jeff Stryker as their play-by-play guy. They have Vampiro as the color guy, but he plays himself. I mean, whatever his regular shoot name is, he goes by that. But he also manages another one of the wrestlers, and he's got that kind of an edge to him. If you see him, it kind of looks kind of the edge. And they got Chavo Guerrero's down there. I just seen at the end of that they just brought in Rey Mysterio. They got this big, huge freaking dude that came in and just wrecked everybody. And he's got a big mask. He's got a mask on and ultimate heel. That's one thing I like. It. You know who the good guys are and you know who the bad guys are at Lucha Underground. That's something that's missing in pro wrestling. I'm tired of watching this freaking tweener crap. We don't need tweeners in pro wrestling. We need defined good guys and bad guys. The crowd needs to know who they should be cheering for and who they should be booing for. Or if whatever, at that point, they can make the choice. But at least let them know who the good guy and the bad guy is. And that thing I hate is two good guys wrestling each other. The crowd doesn't know who they should cheer or who they should boo for. I mean, if you're that short staffed when you're booking a wrestling show, just don't put that event and that match on the card. Find something else to do with these wrestlers. Put them in a three-way. Do something else with them. But don't have wrestlers, good guys wrestling good guys, bad guys wrestling bad guys. Have a definitive so we know who they are. So, I mean, it makes a difference. And we're going on about 8:13 here. And hopefully a couple of minutes, Jake Manning will be calling in at 8:15 like usual. We have our scheduled guest coming on, the Man Scout, Jake Manning. It's going to be a great interview. I'm going to talk to him about his life in pro wrestling, stand-up comedy, his WrestleMania experience, and much more. He is taking time. The man stays busy. He's got two or three podcasts that he's handling himself. He's got stand-up comedy tonight, so he's going to try to fit me in between the podcast that he's doing, stand-up comedy, and God, who knows what else. So I'm telling you, it ought to be something else. I'm looking forward to this interview. Also going on this weekend in Orangeburg, South Carolina, CWA Pro Wrestling Saturday Night Mayhem. Tickets are floor seats are $10. Ringside advance tickets are $15. Ringside at the door are $18. Doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time is 7:30. Saturday, April 9th in Orangeburg, South Carolina, the National Guard Armory at 1645 Stonewall Jackson Boulevard. The card is subject to change, but you can also go to cwaprowrestling.com for more information, which is always good. You can give them a call as well. Tickets are available at 803-533-1111 or 803-707-4072. So that's going to be a great event. I'll be down there in Orangeburg myself. You know, they have the regular lineup. The Insane Lumberjack Timber will be there. We have a new champion now, and Michael Judas. He'll be returning. Of course, I manage the Salem Center 6 and the Future of Wrestling, Stephen Hunter. A lot of great wrestlers will be there. If you haven't been to a CWA Pro Wrestling show, I'll tell you, they're running 13 years in a row, which is unheard of in the indies. I mean, they put a top-notch show on. You see, you hear a lot of people talking about all these other companies that are doing great things, and they really are, but until you do 13 years, then you have bragging rights. I mean, if you just start to draw a good crowd, hey, power to you. I bow and tip my hat to you. But until you put 13 years under your belt, you're not really doing nothing in the world of professional wrestling. I'm telling you, that's bragging rights. And CWA has that bragging right. Roger Gleaton is doing some good things, and he has a core group of wrestlers that he built up. And he's got a good town down there. Orangeburg is a great town to work. The fans down there are rowdy. They are some of the rowdiest wrestling fans I've ever had the opportunity to perform in front of. And I'll tell you, they come in town, even if there's anything else in town, those people show up without fail. I've seen many a nights where I look out there at 7 o'clock and there's like nobody, but just before the bell, wow, a crowd will show up. I look out there and the place is sold out. It happens like that all the time. It's incredible. So that's going to be this weekend. So you guys make sure you get out there and get your tickets. So tell you something else, pro wrestling. It has me stunned at times. Some of the things I see people do with pro wrestling. If you're going to do something in pro wrestling, make sure it's going to sell, make you some money. If you're not, you're wasting time. I was just having a conversation this today, and was talking about how many events that I want to do a weekend. You know, I really don't want to do that many events every week. You know, I want to be able to, a couple weekends. You know, a month would be good. You know, but at the end of the day, I really don't want to do that many events. I want to do good quality events. I don't want to do 15 events that don't mean nothing. I'd like to do 2 or 3 a month that really means something. Because at the end of the day, you're gonna get your paycheck on how much people you know show up. But more of that, it's gonna be a promoter that actually spends the money and you know that actually pays you to do the deal. So that's how I'd rather put my have quality over quantity anytime when it comes to pro wrestling. A good quality show, you know, that you're proud to say that you're a part of. You're not somebody just trying to put something on just so they could say they run pro wrestling. A good quality show or a good promoter actually is meaning something. So that's just what you got to be. So I'd rather do less shows and make more money than a bunch of shows. Because not all shows are good shows, unfortunately, in pro wrestling. There's a lot of bad shows out there. There's a lot of shows that are run just so promoters can have some kind of place that they can make themselves champion and break everyone to their pro wrestlers. So, you know, I mean, it's just bad. I would just rather do less shows that actually mean something than more shows that mean nothing. I mean, I said before, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. We have enough problems. We need good quality wrestling. And I'm hearing now too that in South Carolina, that with the Athletic Commission, maybe I'm reading it wrong, they're now banning any chairs. You can't hit no one with a chair in South Carolina, any kind of kendo sticks, any weapons. I know you're not allowed to bleed, but it's pro wrestling. It's a work. I'm not really beating somebody up, but I've been hitting them with a chair. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, yeah. That's, you know, you're not really beating nobody up with a chair. So it's crazy. I mean, yeah. Things that I go through. And, I mean, so before too long, I mean, it's going to be the point where me hitting someone with my cane is going to be considered a lethal weapon. And it's getting ridiculous. So I do believe I have the Man Scout online. Man Scout, Jake Manning, are you on the line, sir?
Yes, I am, sir. How are you?
I am doing phenomenal. I appreciate you calling in, spending some time. I know you're a busy, busy man. You're all over the place. Good Lord, you're harder to track down than my husband's ex-wife. So I'll tell you, it's hard to keep in contact with you these days. You're all over the place.
Yeah.
I know you said that you're getting ready to do stand-up comedy tonight. I know you just got back from WrestleMania. You did WrestleCon. Good Lord, I mean, I want some of your schedule.
So. Yeah, and sorry it took a few minutes for me to dial in, but apparently you're a few digits on short on an actual phone number, but that's nothing new. Maybe a few bricks shy of a load as well, Joey. But I apologize for that. I should have got up with you sooner when I noticed the mistake as well. But yes, I'm very busy right now. So.
Definitely. No problem at all. I appreciate you taking time and jump to the hurdle and make sure you got here for the interview. So tell us, first off, how did you get started in pro wrestling? I mean, I know somewhat under you were. Tell us about pro wrestling for yourself.
Well, even before High Spot, I started in the Midwest with a group called New Midwest Wrestling. A group of guys. I think a lot of guys just wanted to kind of have a group they wrestled at once a month. And they put on great shows. I mean, they drew like 500 people, 300 people on a consistent basis every month. And it was a good little show. Like if you wanted to, you know, kind of be a pro wrestler, take a couple dates and stuff like that, wrestle twice a month and stuff like that. You know, it was a good thing, you know, and you know, nothing against them or whatever, but I had a little bit loftier goals and aspirations of things I wanted to do, and I was willing to do just about anything to do so. So I started there realized that I needed to get a little bit better training, at least to reach out further and to achieve the things that I wanted to achieve and stuff like that. And that's where I found out about the High Spots internship, which was supposed to be a three-month internship, which has now turned into a 11-year residency in Charlotte, North Carolina. That seems a little hard to believe. That's kind of how that got started, and now I've been in High Spots now since May of 2005, which I graduated on a Saturday, walked in graduation, packed up everything I owned, a pickup truck, and drove across country on a Tuesday after that. And left my fiance at the time behind and came here to Charlotte, North Carolina for what I thought was a three-month internship, which is, you know, I've been much longer. So.
Wow. Now tell me about High Spots. And I know High Spots, I mean, everyone sees it online. It's a wrestling super center, everything wrestling. To me, it's like wrestling wonderland, but you actually work there. Tell me about how it is being at High Spots.
Well, like I said, when you walk in, it's a sense of wonderment. And it was much like that for me. One, the apartment where I was supposed to be staying for my internship wasn't ready, and I ended up staying at Kikio's house, who was the owner of High Spots. And I saw like a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat action figure. It was one of those old figures, ink ones, that they made a long time ago. And it was just sitting on his table, and I was like, man, you really cool about this Steamboat action figure. Maybe I'll ask him if I can have one. Little did I know that the place that I would be going to the next day, the High Spots office, there would be 2,000 of those action figures just sitting on the office, and another 2,000 of the bloody version of that action figure from Fingers Inc., if you remember those, they had a long time ago. But that kind of sums it up right there. Just a list people would be amazed to have. We have like 1,000 of it. And just the things that people come in and it catches their eye, it always amazes me. Like, oh, that country, I walk by this as I go to the bathroom like every day. Like, this is a cherished item for you? Really? Okay. You know, and just like this, like I went through a phase of going through every one of the Japanese magazines that we have in the office. Like, you know, that's just privilege. I've looked through every one of those and looked for like interesting pictures and, you know, just Japanese wrestling. It's, you know, mostly the newspaper, but I'm looking at Japanese magazines from like 1993, you know, pictures from the Super Juniors tournaments.
Yeah, I know myself, just being like a super mark that I am. I mean, I'll be first one to admit it. I mean, I don't make $1 million working in pro wrestling, so it's got to be for the love of it. But, I mean, I could get lost for days inside that place. I mean, I don't know how you can concentrate actually working there. I walk in the door and there's a DVD, like, with Justin. Oh, man, that looks like a good one. I'd like to watch that DVD.
Yeah, it takes a while. Like, I think about year three or four, things started to finally start to wane down with me. But like I said, it took years for that to kind of go away for me, for it to kind of be seen as kind of my office. But, it took some time for sure before that happened.
And another thing when I watch you, how do you do this? Well, I watch you when you interview certain wrestlers, like, which to me is like, I don't know how you keep a straight face when you're interviewing them. I see you turn away from the camera sometimes because obviously you're ready to lose it. But how can you keep a straight face when you interview him?
Well, see, you know, I'm probably going to give you the best answer out of everybody else, too. I think I finally had dissected it a little bit, what I was doing with $5 Wrestling and why I never felt like I was making fun of these guys. And I think I've kind of circled back. Because before, I was like, you know, I was trying to keep a straight face and be professional. And that's usually the standard answer I give for that question, because I've been asked it a lot. But I think I finally figured out about my personality and my relationship with Freight Train and then thinking about that. You know, I've had a lot of time to think about that. But I think the reason why I could always keep a straight face is because I always treated what they're doing as genuine. Now, to you or to anybody else that, you know, or some people that like to, you know, get super passionate and very markish and very, pro wrestling should be a certain way, and AJ Styles shouldn't have lost to Chris Jericho at WrestleMania, and people are like, it should be this, and why is Jake Manning getting a title shot when he hasn't won a match in 2 years, you know, and people that kind of take wrestling probably a little too seriously, and they look at something like a Freight Train or a Jeff Hart, and they go, they have no business thing, and they'll laugh at them. But for me, I don't think I was ever laughing at them. I always felt like I was giving guys an opportunity to say what they wanted, and I was being genuine with them. And I think that's why I never really broke a whole lot, because I was doing a job and I took it very seriously. And this is what this person wanted to say. And was it probably the words that would come out of someone's mouth for a 5-star promo or the best promo of all time? No, absolutely not. But how many guys out there do we know that would, you know? It's not like I was interviewing CM Punk and I was well aware of that. And if people thought what we were doing is funny, and if they said something that was a little off the cuff or a little aloof, I was being very much in the moment and felt that I needed to call them out on that. Like, you know, no, wait a minute, you don't live in Canada, Jeff Hart. You live in Gastonia, North Carolina. Let's talk about that for a second. You know, like, no, let's be real. You know, let's be in the moment here. Let's not put on a character, let's not put a face. So I was being very genuine, and I think that's what was the difference with that, and why that worked is because I genuinely took the answer they were giving me as the truth and how they felt and what they wanted to put out there, and I honored that, and I never saw it as an opportunity to make fun of anybody. And now, I did make jokes because I have a very dry wit, and I did enjoy getting in my comments because I honestly like making people laugh. And that's why I did it, and it wasn't to make fun of anybody or belittle anybody, but if somebody said something aloof, I was most certainly going to call them out on it, much in the same way that when I do an improv scene and somebody says something ridiculous, I go, wait a minute, what'd you say about your mom and this? And you looking like your uncle? Wait a minute, let's take the scene in this direction, you know? And I think that's the type of person I am. And like I said, I normally, when people have asked me in other interviews, I don't think I've given that detail of an answer. See, that's an exclusive for you, but that's really what it is. Right? I took it.
I've always felt that you were very respectful with the wrestlers, you and the $5 guys, the heroes of Burke County. I've watched the DVDs. You did. I mean, these wrestlers, these guys were chasing their dreams, let's be honest, we're all in the indies. So I mean, there's good indies and bad indies, but we're all in indies. So at the end of the day, I mean, who am I to say what's good and what's bad? But
if Chuck Taylor gave me an answer that was a little loop, I would have chimed in as well, or Zane Riley, who's my friend, you know, I would have come in with such a cutting, witty comment just for a joke, because I like making people laugh. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, you are great at making people laugh, because I've literally almost fell off the bed before in hotel rooms watching streaming stuff, especially the interview you did with Freight Train when he was hit the table, and he knocked the table down. He was like, You think, we'll get a better table. We'll get a $5 table. I fell off the bed laughing that night. That was hilarious. And, I mean, your timing is – yeah, I could tell when you can – I don't know how long you've been doing stand-up, but I bet your stand-up is phenomenal because you have a great timing when you do your interviews.
Well, I mean, stand-up's a different animal. Stand-up is very similar to pro wrestling. But there are certain things about pro wrestling that help me with stand-up. But at the same time, too, sometimes those points don't meet in the same place. So it's all about taking these skills and these things that I've learned and calibrating it. You know, it's like I've got a carburetor for a 1975 Chevy or whatever, but I've got to put it in a 1977 Chevy. So that, you know, I got to drill out certain holes and I got to do this and I got to make it all work. You know, but, you know, it'll work on this engine, but I just got to do a little bit of work and calibrate it properly for the specifications that I got to be dealing with.
So let me ask you this. I've seen you interview so many wrestlers and you've been around so many people, especially in every place you've been. Who was one wrestler that you interviewed, even though, I mean, you're being professional, you say it in your mind, oh, my God, this is XYZ right now I'm next to. I mean...
Huh? As far as what?
I mean, I know you've interviewed a lot of wrestlers. You're around a lot of wrestlers that are big names in wrestling. And I know you don't ever want to mark out. You want to be professional all the time. You know, you want to be looked at as an equal, being in wrestling just like they are. But is there anybody in your mind while you were interviewed, you said to yourself, oh, my God, I'm next to X, Y, Z, and I'm managed, and I'm interviewing him right now?
Sorry. Yes, sorry, I didn't quite understand the last part of that question, but I got it now. The last podcast, well, not the last one, but the one before that I just released before WrestleMania, I did the Stranger in a Southern Land episode, which is my podcast, which is available at sslshow.com. Notice how I slipped that plug in for myself right there. But
plug it away. plug it, brother.
I interviewed Ricky the Dragon Steamboat for my podcast, and Ricky said he could only give me a half an hour. I tend to do things in an hour. It's a non-specific podcast in the sense that I'm not going to necessarily go in this match on this WCW pay-per-view wrestle this person. But, I mean, I did talk, of course, about the matches with Flair, and, of course, I talked about the Hall of Fame, and, of course, I talked about the match with Savage, mostly because I knew I was going to release it around WrestleMania, you know, because I think those are essential to him. But ideally, I wanted, you know, why I've started my Stranger on the Southern Line podcast is to get into the same room as successful people and ask them how they became successful. And do they feel successful? How did they define success? Are they happy with success? Is it still something they chase? Are they still like, okay, I did it, and can I relax? And I had that type of conversation with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, which is not the type of interview he would have with a PWI Insider or even a Art of Wrestling Colt Cabana or In Your Head Radio or any of the other ones. And they're fine, and they serve their purpose, but I was going for something a little bit different. And I felt like I connected with Ricky in a small part. And like I said, I was only supposed to have a half an hour, but I, being the pro that I am, was able to sneak in an extra 10 minutes. And the last 10 minutes that I sneaked in, I think, were the best part, because I asked him, like, how did you define success? You know, and he feels like his career is complete when he got in the WWE Hall of Fame. And I was able to ask a good follow-up in from there and then ask about some of his failures. And he talked about his life and marriages that didn't turn out very well, and how he felt about it and how he dealt with that. You know, I talked with a person who's a Hall of Famer, and I asked him how he dealt with failure, and he gave me an honest answer. And there were times during that I'm like, I can't believe I'm having this type of conversation with this type of individual. It's what I wanted. It's what I'd hoped. But I thought I was going to get a standard answer, because there was a couple of answers in there that I felt like were very standard, very, you know, crafted answers where he's like, you know, Triple H is an excellent worker, the WWE has got an excellent product, you know, the same thing that you hear a lot of these guys that are under the WWE umbrella still that are good ambassadors, and I thought I was going to get one of those interviews, but when he finally opened up personally, I was like, yes, this is the type of interview that I wanted to put out there, and that's what I want, that's what I seek out with those type of interviews, you know, is to get in there with somebody, and Ricky's Dragon Steamboat, the podcast I did with him was that. You know, the Ric Flair shoot that we did for High Spots was pretty crazy. And actually, every interaction that we had with Ric Flair during that time was crazy. So I would say those would be the two, but I definitely have to say recently the first thing that's on the tip of my mind is definitely the podcast I just did with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Phenomenal. Yeah, that would have been one of those surreal moments, like, wow, I'm interviewing Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Yeah, and you did, and you're right. Everyone asks him about every match he's ever had. I mean, the different questions you want to ask somebody that makes a difference, I believe, in an interview all day.
That's I mostly wanted to talk about, and sometimes it takes a while to get in there. So you talk about wrestling to weasel your way in. So I know how to cover that ground, and I know the people that listen to you, they would expect to see that, but I felt like we could have gone another 20 minutes about the topics we were talking in the last 10, and that's why I want to do the podcast. That's why I want to talk to people, because I don't talk to people a whole lot. I mean, you've seen me at wrestling shows, Joey. I don't
right.
talk to people. I'm not a nice person. I understand this. I'm well aware of this. But the only time I feel like I'm engaged with people is right now and having conversations with them and connect with human beings is when I podcast with them, or when I'm really doing a good set on stage and I feel like I've read the crowd properly, or I'm not working on jokes that could possibly alienate the audience and I'm trying to ride a line and I step over on a line, but I'm doing material that I know works and I know connects with people. You know, I mean, those are really the only times I really connect with people, and you know, I try to avoid that as much as possible, but we need that as human beings, and I have to learn to accept that, and that's kind of what I've done.
So tell me about WrestleCon.
Well, it's in the book, thank God. Thank God. It's over. So this year was probably the best year. I don't know quite all the numbers yet. I do know that it was far better than San Jose, but San Jose was down year mostly because everything is spread out. Where this year we were right around the corner from WWE Access, you know, WWE, of course, you know, we almost got pushed out because of it, but like we were able to stay because of certain things that I don't want to get into, but we were able to stay. I guarantee we didn't harm their business. Their business didn't harm us. If anything, we made an experience for the wrestling fans. And gosh darn, I feel like if you were a wrestling fan and you got one of our hotels and you got to go to Access and you got to go to WrestleCon, you really won out. Like, wrestling won out in Dallas. You could have walked, you weren't walking distance to Access, you weren't walking distance of WrestleCon. You know, you got to meet just about everyone you wanted to see. You got to see some of the best wrestling ever. And of course, the big caveat at the end of the weekend was WrestleMania. It just, you know, the whole weekend, I'm still kind of hung over from it. But I think when we look back at this weekend, we'll especially not just me, but I think the wrestling community, your wrestling fans, and everybody was a part of it, they'll realize how special that weekend was. I mean, think about it. Like, you know, people want to argue how many people were in Texas Stadium, you know, I mean, AT&T Stadium. But, like, even the reports of people saying that is not as much, it's still more than Pontiac Silverdome. It's still the most highly attended, WrestleMania ever. So you can argue that all you want, but it was the most highly attended WrestleMania ever. We were part of the biggest ever, you know, everybody that was there at a time in wrestling where all the shows, maybe Ring of Honor, Evolve, and what they were doing over there, the WrestleCon Super Show. Everybody recorded record numbers, large crowds, fantastic shows, passionate fans. Like, there was such big business for professional wrestling and such big positive things that, gosh, you can't, like, I can't think of a weekend anybody's going to come close to that. And it really only feels like just the beginning of some very special times. If you think about back in 1987 when the Pontiac Silverdome happened, and then you think about how big it was in 88 and 89, and it became a big mainstream deal, and everybody knew about who Macho Man was and Hulk Hogan was. And that's, you know, and that's, we're coming into a golden age, and this is probably the thing that starts that, much like WrestleMania 3 was that, you know, for the WWE. So, you know, the next 2 or 3 years is going to be pretty special, and I think what we just got done doing was the beginning of that.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, I've seen WrestleMania on TV, and I've seen it, but I've never been to one live. What is WrestleMania like live? Is it, I mean, it's just a sea of people?
Well, I was in the standing room only plaza this year, so I didn't, it was a little tough, but it was a sea of people. Like, you know, I mean, AT&T Stadium is very big. It's a very big, very big stadium. And we got in there like just as the pay-per-view portion of it started, like after like the early matches went on, and it was jam-packed. And to see that many people, like even at like, and they even had like, they didn't like block anything off on the entranceway side like they do sometimes. No, I mean, there were people kind of almost around the entranceway pieces, and they had a very light entranceway because I think they were expecting a lot of people. So it was pretty ridiculous, the amount of people that were there. Like, it was rather impressive to see that many people. And when you hear, you know, I had a friend that does comedy that was there, and he got to be in the same building when Stone Cold Steve Austin hit the ring. You know, for him, he was going nuts, you know, and like, for him to be in the same building as The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Mankind, Shawn Michaels, it's just unbelievable. There's a feeling in the air, and then getting to see the Undertaker's entrance and then the Wyatts and the lights go out. You know, it's, you know, you're not going to see that anywhere else. And luckily, I think this last WrestleMania was like my, I think, fourth WrestleMania I've been to. Yeah, so it's the third or the fourth one I've been to, and it's still pretty impressive. And, you know, I still feel like, you know, this WrestleMania, it's going to be tough to beat. It's pretty special, you know, as much surprises and things that happened on it and, you know, good things that happened, you know, just the fact of the women, you know, you look at how well the women did, like that match was great. And, you know, we went from an era of girls that were bikini models and girls that wrestled like that were told that they would never make it and be fired and nobody, you know, and we're beginning that renaissance. Like, there was a time during the WrestleMania show that was like, oh, gosh, what's the headline going to be on Yahoo News about this show? It's going to be Women Steal the Show? Is it Rock makes a surprise appearance and scores a record-setting, like, six-second match? Is it, you know, set the WrestleMania attendance record? Is it Shaquille O'Neal in the Battle Royal? And then you realize, like, gosh, like, there's just, like, so many things that they could have wrote as a headline for the show. And when you've got like six headlines you can write about a show, that's pretty insane. That's pretty special. I can't think of too many WrestleManias that can say that and boast that. And this was definitely one of them.
Yeah, I was really impressed that they did away with the Divas title and they got the Women's Championship belt now. To me, that was respectful for the women's. Because there's so many, like you said, back in the day, it was bikini matches, rolling around lingerie matches. Now it's just ladies that go out there and work their asses off. And they're great wrestlers.
Well, when you see a little girl, like, and you see, like, Matt pictures from NXT, and you see Bayley coming to the ring, and a little girl hugs her, you can't think but, like, gosh, like, that girl wants to be a wrestler. That girl is going to pay money on wrestling for the rest of her life, and she gets to touch and hug her favorite superstar. And like, she sees a girl that's doing stuff that's athletic and getting there and mixing it up just like the boys are. Like, don't you see how empowering that is to a woman and how wonderful and great that is? And she could still be pretty, she could still be beautiful, but she could do something athletically that is unbelievable, and she could do it herself. Like, isn't that the type of like thing we want for people in general, but also especially for women? You know, you're not like, oh, she's just hot and she's objectified. No, there's something very special. And the comedian Mike Lawrence, who usually gives a lot of things a hard time, but he also likes to point out some of the good and positive things that are out there. And there's a picture of a little girl hugging Bailey, and he, in the caption of the Instagram post, it says, it's amazing what you can do. It's amazing. Gosh, I'm trying to remember. I'm going to probably misquote it, but I want to get it as close as I possibly can. It's amazing how you can create, bring in a new audience if you just effing try. You know, and it's true.
Sure.
Like, that you, you know, if you show, like, these women as athletic individuals, and you almost got to credit that to someone like a Ronda Rousey in the UFC and what they did. Like, you know, women look towards Ronda Rousey. Like, I'm scared of Ronda Rousey. I'm a guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I, like, you know, and that's, to look upon that as seeing a woman who's athletic and that strong and willing to set goals and do things and be so hyper-focused on one particular goal. There have been female wrestlers been doing that for well over a decade now, and a lot of those girls got their dreams stifled and had bikini models, like, treat them and disrespect them and just, like, the crap that they had to deal with and the just the damage that they got done to their bodies for them to now be given a match and as much time as they were given with the utmost respect on the biggest stage of the year and being one of the best matches on the show, like, to me, that was, like, very, very special and just, like, felt good.
It did feel good. It did feel good. It felt right. It felt respectful.
It's amazing when you see that happen. You're like, why wasn't this done before? This makes so much sense. This is right. And, like, how many little girls see that as something special? And that's why, guess what? There's little girls that go to WrestleMania. Could you have said that, like, years ago when Dawn Marie is wrestling in pudding? Like,
no.
So it's like you realize how wrong we were, you know? And, like everybody. Like, no, this... You could do. You could have done this, you know. Gosh, it's so good.
Yeah, I'm wondering now if TNA is going to change their title and follow suit now, and or if they'll continue to with the Knockouts Championship. I know it's a totally other brand, but I watch some other brands.
Oh, I mean, they were doing great with women as well, and then they just stopped doing that as well, you know. And, like, I don't know why you don't do that. I mean, and I'm a big proponent of, you know, like, always having a woman's match on the card, and maybe you have a girl that mixes it up with the men. So now you have three girls on the show. Yeah, maybe we start discussing that as a thing, you know, as we start talking about having three girls on the show as opposed to one or two, you know. Let's start thinking about that, and then start thinking about, like, girl tag team matches are built to, like, you know, make that a big thing, you know. Maybe we start thinking about that. Or maybe we have a girls match and a mixed tag. And then you got four girls on the show. Why don't we start talking about that? You know, like, there's plenty of girls right now. And any girl that's getting in right now, I mean, they're getting – it is the best time ever to be a female wrestler. There are a lot of girls getting in that maybe kind of don't deserve kind of where they're at right now. But at the same time, too, women have had such a raw deal. That's just how it should be. So,
I agree. Something else I want to ask you. I hear a lot of people talk about pro wrestling's on a decline. I see pictures of when you're out doing shows and it's like a Thursday night and it's like a sold out building. What is wrong with people's? What are they doing wrong with promoting I see some place obscure thing at Virginia and the building is sold out on a Wednesday or Thursday night.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show you just got to work a talent. But I will say this, though. Things were very bad for a very long time. It's just the mentality that just people have. They start getting, you know, they want to float towards a negative. It's in the same sense that people will talk about how bad this economy is when every economist will tell you that under this now presidency of Barack Obama, whether he had anything to do with it or not, we can just put that politics aside. Where we're at right now financially as an economy is we are back to where we were before when everything crashed and fell apart and everybody was talking about bad economies. We are finally back as a nation. But nobody is talking about that, especially any Republican candidate. They're talking about, you know, making it, you know, making America great or doing this, when really it's back to where it was before. It's different. It's not the same. People have to be a little bit smarter and have to work a little bit harder. Now, granted, people aren't getting the good middle management jobs or the good middle jobs. They're going to have to take two lower level jobs that they're going to end up making more money, and they have more flexibility. They have two jobs now, so if they get fired from one, they got the other one to kind of pick up the pace, you know, to help them out, even things out.
Doing a set, in a sense.
And it's the same, that type of mentality exists with pro wrestling. That people want to think about the dark ages, as I will probably label them, the 2006s through the 2008s and even 2009s. I remember talking to Michael then, and we were talking about how bad shows were. And I told him, it's not always going to be this way. Things are changing right now. I said that in 2009, things are going to change. It's going to be 3 or 4 years before they turn around. Now it took, you know, probably closer to 5, but we got there. And you know, it has a large part of people know that wrestling exists. Because when I used to do a short story about me, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Iowa. All I had was WWF Superstars. I was unaware of WCW or Jim Crockett Promotions. I was in 1988. I was under the impression that Rhythm and Blues was the third best tag team in the world, and Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express weren't even anything that existed in my mind. So obviously, that's not the case. So. Because I was all WWF, and then when WWF went off syndication, I just thought wrestling was done. I thought wrestling didn't exist anymore. I was a kid, and there were no indie shows where I was at. I saw a poster for an indie show one time in college, and that blew my mind that wrestling existed anywhere other than on TV, you know. And when I saw the A&E documentary about wrestling school my senior year, the one that had John Cena in it, I was like, oh, my God, there are wrestling schools? And then I immediately just started researching them, which I should have just went to wrestling school as opposed to go to college. Now, granted, my parents wouldn't have liked that, but that's what I should have done. But all I knew about being a pro wrestler was that you played for the University of Miami. Jim Ross saw you do the bench press a couple of times. You just naturally knew how to throw on an arm drag, and then you got signed to the WWE, and you debuted at Madison Square Garden as Rocky Maivia. That's all I knew, is how you became a pro wrestler. I just didn't know it existed. I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know the indies were a thing. So I think you have to take in consideration the fact that WWE was willing to acknowledge that CM Punk was in a place called Ring of Honor and had a match with an NXT talent well before they were ever signed in a place called IWA Mid-South. And then you put that footage on a DVD that sells very well, probably the last best-selling DVD. And then you do articles online about CM Punk wrestling in Ring of Honor. Oh, there's a place that exists outside of WWE. Even in this world of internet and YouTube and everywhere else, you have to keep in mind that sometimes kids will only just go to WWE and they only know WWE exists. How many times have we gone to Time Warner Arena and my boss Michael has looked around and goes, none of these people know that High Spots exists. All these kids are online, they're on their phones, and they have no idea that there's a company just up the street that is an online merchandise provider, and you can just type in WWE merchandise, and I'm one of the top searches. And I'm right here in Charlotte, and none of these kids know.
Right.
That's the thing, they don't know. All they know is WWE. They only know that exists. So that when they go to, they've seen, they're a big wrestling fan, that's all they know, because they're only just watching the WWE Network, and they don't search anywhere else, because they're not told anything else exists, because that was WWE's mentality. So when they do things like acknowledge Evolve and they put Global Series matches on Evolve shows, now people know about Evolve. And then those wrestlers get to wrestle in front of more people, you know, because anytime WWE, somebody goes to NXT, the Twitter followers quadruple immediately, you know, and they've got a bigger audience, more people know about them. And then when they get released and they start tweeting about shows, there are more people tweeting about a PWS show. Or a Creative Pro or Wrestle Pro shows in New Jersey, or an FIP show, you know, and get the word out, you know, about pro wrestling and acknowledging that other things exist other than WWE. And that is why live crowds
are so much better is because these people want to spend money in wrestling. They want more and more wrestling. And, you know, WWE can only put out what they put out. But, you know, they want something different, something. They want to try something different. And then they go to these places, which a lot of these places that exist today that are drawing very well, they went through the dark ages. They're the ones that survived through the awful years of 2008 and 2009 and just kept their doors open. And just had shows and kept continuously running and putting and just worried about putting out a good product. And now we are in this new age where, you know, shows that only drew 80 people now have 300 people at them. We're now at a place where shows that used to at max get 800 people, 700 people are now drawing 1,500, 2,000 people easily, you know, just because people know it exists. People are looking at other things and, you know, promoters are getting smart and putting, getting YouTube videos online. You look at someone like Matt Hardy, who's tweeting out stuff and YouTube, putting YouTube promos out and getting the word out. And, you know, you book guys that have internet followings and they're already following because they're on NXT or they're following them because they're on WWE. And now they hear that they're an indie show in Rahway, New Jersey. So I have to be there now. So, you know, it's really exciting. And that's pretty much why it's changed, is because WWE has been willing to acknowledge that something exists other than them, and then that puts more people in the seats for indie shows, and guys now get to wrestle in front of larger crowds. And that's only better, because people will get better.
I think so, too. I think there's got to be more than just WWE. There's got to be different alternatives. There's got to be competition. I mean, or what pushes them to become better?
They're gonna do what they're gonna do. There's no competition whatsoever. But why do you
have to
watch them? Nobody will compete with them. And they finally realize that. Evolve is not gonna compete with them. Ring of Honor is not gonna compete. TNA can't compete with them. They know this. Nobody will compete with them. Nobody will come close whatsoever. They do not fear that whatsoever. They have finally become secure in that. You know, as opposed to being insecure about it. They're secure about who they are, and now they're looking to the future and making wrestling better. Like, how do you make the women's division better? You support places like Shine and Shimmer, you know, acknowledge those places so more people come out to see them, so there's more money so you can bring in more girls from Japan and they can wrestle some of these American girls. And when those matches happen, we can sign those girls and they've learned all this, you know, and then more money, more people going to shows, but like getting behind these people, like I said, that survived the dark ages. They were smart. They're good business people. Like, you know, you support those people, you know, like that's what you do, is you support the people that are doing good business and you facilitate them as much as possible to put more people in front of them, because the more people you wrestle in front of, you figure it out, you know, and that's, you know, really it, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So if you could go back to any era in pro wrestling and to wrestle, what era would you go back to?
Memphis. I would wrestle probably, the best time would have been 19, get there, spring of 1982. Just, you know, a lot of the Lawler Kaufman thing would be going on. Get there about that time, but I would get in right before the Fabs took off. And then the big year of 1983 for Memphis Wrestling, where it was just so the crowds were ridiculously large. Get out in like 1984, you know, things started to fall off. Probably go to Bill Watts shortly after that. And then from Bill Watts, go to Crockett. And then from there, hopefully get that WCW money or get the WWF run where I, you know, become a cartoon act and get a doll made of me.
right.
I know there's a lot to answer right there, and that was a very detailed answer, but that's how I would do it. And there's a lot of people that follow that same exact path, but most importantly, getting to be in Memphis in 1982, being maybe one of the guys that was part of Jimmy Hart's first family. That would have been pretty special. And considering how many times I've wrestled Jerry Lawler and how incredible it's been every time, and just being one of those guys that came in and was a top heel that cut promos on him every week and do a hot angle to get as many people as we could in the Mid-South Coliseum every Monday, that type of experience would have been invaluable and would have been something I would cherish.
Now, the Man Scout, to me, that's one of the most original characters in pro wrestling I've seen in a long time. How did you come up with that character, or did somebody else come up with that character?
Oh, I came up with it myself. I wanted to do it since day one. And the wrestling school I was at told me, no, you are going to be Mr. Elite, and you are going to be Mr. Perfect Knockoff. Like, I wasn't even, like, Mr. Elite Jake Manning. I was just Mr. Elite. I didn't have a name. And I told me to get a singlet, and I put this Mr. Elite on the butt, like boots, and I did that for a while, and then I finally became Jake Manning and knocked around and just was an average heel. And it was whatever, and then finally I was like, you know, let's go back to this Man Scout thing. And I did it one time. And all of a sudden, like, before I ever locked up with Bobby Houston, he's like, this is the best thing you've ever done. And so from then on, I was like, okay, I'm going to start working this in more. And then finally, it became a full-fledged thing for me.
Yeah, to me, the character is great. You're one of the – I've never told you this because we don't talk too much, but you're one of the few wrestlers out here that I could see myself wanting, if I had a chance, wanting to manage. Because I think your character would be over huge as a heel. I've seen you work heel before when you were at Jamil Temple in Columbia for CWA. I watched you. I was over there doing color commentary during it. I'm thinking in my mind, wow, things I could do if I got a chance to cut promos with him. Because that character itself, just as a heel to me, it was if you did like the crybaby character is just as a heel. I mean. Yeah, with that type of character, I mean, I could just see the crowd just being so mad at you. I mean, you're playing a Man Scout.
Yeah, well, that was very early. It took me much longer than it should have to figure out everything about the character, especially as a heel and everything like that. It probably took a little too long to figure it out. Like, it was kind of when I was probably about 2013 is probably when I feel like all the pieces were together. And there's a couple of things I picked up now, but like I've been focusing a lot more on stand-up right now. I mean, there's a few things I picked up the last year or two that I think is kind of different and kind of part of the repertoire that's pretty important to the act that I put out there. It's nice that you said that, but I feel like the pieces weren't quite there when you were seeing it. But I feel like they exist now and how they should be. But, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal.
Now explain to me, I see when you post that you're under for life. I mean, tell me about that.
It's I'm taking the power away from the promoter. I feel like for a long time, something that the story he told about one time he went up to Dusty, and Dusty had like sent some guys out to Florida, and like, you know, they were making good money and they were being stars, and he sent George off to Kansas City, and that was supposed to mean he'd be a star, and that didn't work out. But he was sending these guys off to other places, and they were being big stars and working on top, and George went to Dusty like, Dusty, why don't you ever send me any place and have me work on top in Florida or these other places? And yeah, Dusty looked right at George and said, "No, what your problem is, kid, you can work." And George never got it. And even when George told me the story, I didn't really fully get it either until like it happened to me. You know, and I realized what it was in wrestling, you especially this day and age, it's all about yourself. You know, but I've always been taught you make the other guy look good and people would want to wrestle you and respect you more. Well, if you do that, you become a punching bag for people. And you have great matches, but you don't get over. The only way you get over is you do a million flips, a million false finishes, and you just decimate the other guy. It's a great match. And especially for someone, I'll be very generous. I'm like, please, more. Give me more, more, more. Give me more of the stuff you do. I'll make it look good. And when you make the other guy's stuff look good, and then usually guys like that want to do a million stuff, they don't know how to make your stuff look good. So your stuff comes off awful. Their stuff comes off fantastic. They've done all their stuff. Then all of a sudden people want to book that guy. And then all of a sudden people forget about you and you're off the show. When really, before you had that match with the guy, the promoter goes, hey, this kid just does a bunch of flips. He has no idea about psychology. Jake, can you please pull a good match out of this kid? You pull a good match out of him, and then that kid goes off and
does whatever in the superstardom and people want to book him, but they forget about you when you were the guy who was begged to fucking make this guy look good. And it's, you become like enhancement talent. And being enhancement talent on the indie scene is awful. It's not a position people want to be. And then now we're in this era where everybody's wants to be like the Young Bucks, and which young, you know, and they're trying to be like Shawn Michaels and steal the show and show everybody, you know, and talk about how over they are and how, you know, we're the biggest stars. You hear it all the time. All these guys talk about how the biggest stars and I'm the best wrestler on the planet and I'm this and, you know, but I feel like my spot of, I like it when a promoter's like, hey, this kid, he's very young, taking a guy who's a 2 and making him a 7. You know, unfortunately, I'm not an Eddie Edwards where I can take a 6 and make him a 10 or a 7 and make him a 10. You know, I'm a guy that takes a 2 and makes him a 6. You know, that's my wheelhouse. That's the type of guy that I am. And nobody appreciates that guy. Nobody talks about how cool that guy is. And he kind of being like, well, I'm going to make this spot cool, you know. And by me just talking about how I'm under and how I lose all the time and how I want to lose all the time. And I haven't, you know, a lot of people haven't paid attention to this, but I have not pinned anybody's shoulders or made anybody submit myself almost 2 years now. Like, I've made it a point to make it a big deal, and that's what I do, you know. And my goal is to make this spot cool. Because it's necessary. I can't tell you how many times
right.
How good it feels when a promoter tells me you're wrestling Jerry Lawler because everybody else is a goofball and I'm afraid he's going to hurt Jerry. They're going to hurt Jerry Lawler. They're going to do something, or they don't know how to take care of someone like Hacksaw Jim Duggan, or they're like, hey, this kid really doesn't know a whole lot of what he's doing. Can you take this 2 and make him a 6? Or hey, here's a 6-man with a bunch of guys. It's going to be a clusterfuck unless you're in it and calling things and making sure that it makes sense. And you do all that. But then at the end of the night, like, the fans don't appreciate you because the guy who was sitting in the front row wearing a Bullet Club shirt with a baseball cap and glasses with his arms crossed telling you how much you suck, like, for real, not like getting heat, but like, for real, you suck. Like, you're awful and get out of the ring so the Young Bucks can get in the ring. You know, like, you don't get appreciated by him. You don't get appreciated by the promoter. The guy who wrestled barely appreciates you. So it's a thankless job. So I tried to make that spot cool. And there's a lot of wrestlers that feel that way in some small extent. And then also, too, there's a lot of fans that go, yeah, we kind of like Barry Horowitz. We appreciate those guys. And let's get behind
right. That.
And it was so different that it stuck out in people's minds that nobody was talking about how under they were. And everybody's talking about how over they are. So I'm talking about how under I am. And then, in the same sense, it takes away the power of the promoter. So when they put me under like that, it's almost like I'm laying on my back and I'm winking at them. Like, hey, you know why I'm here. You know that I'm here because I'm the best wrestler in the ring right now, and I was the one that made this work. I was the one, you know, it takes the power away from them. So I could lose every match for another 5 years or another 2 years, but I could lose matches for 5 years, and it doesn't matter because everybody knows where I stand and how good I am because I made that stand.
Right.
And that's pretty much what I was doing.
I could see that. That's honorable. To me, I mean, other people always looked at the term jobber as being disrespectful, but to me, some of the best wrestlers, period, were the enhancement talent. I mean, yeah.
That's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah, you did. You made that spot awesome.
Nobody's going to do that, and nobody will see that way. And I felt like I'm going to be able to be doing. I just realized that, you know, nobody's going to do anything with me to make me cool or be something that people want to pay attention to. So I have to do it myself. I have to make my spot that I'm stuck in cool. Like, it's desperation. It's really quite honest.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't see anything you do to be desperate as a desperation spot. To me, you're a veteran out there. You're one of these guys that can get in the ring with a young guy and make him look good. You're someone that can go out there with an older wrestler that's experienced and be a good hand, a good solid worker that's not going to make him look bad. You know, you'll go out there, and I've seen you go out there and wrestle your ass off doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I try, and I thank you for that.
I think you do a great job out there. You definitely do, Jake. Jake, I don't know how much time you have, but it's been a pleasure.
I probably need to get going. So I appreciate you giving me the time. If you don't mind, I'd like to plug my social medias for anybody who's paying attention.
Oh, do it. Go for it, brother.
Please follow me on Twitter. I'm available at ManScoutManning and on Instagram at ManScoutManning. Please check out Stranger in a Southern Land, FFLShow.com. Also, tune in. Zane Riley just released a podcast, a podcast series that will be released every other week called How Did This Get Booked? Where basically it's How Did This Get Made of professional wrestling. But the big twist is I make a non-wrestling fan watch one of the worst wrestling shows of all time, and we discuss it. I have a lot of friends who do improv and stand-up comedy, and they've heard of wrestling, but they've never sat down and watched a full wrestling show, so I give them the daunting task of watching a Halloween Havoc 95, WrestleMania 9, Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view, and have them discuss it. And it's usually sometimes the first wrestling event they ever see, and then I give their general reactions. And I think that's the interesting part, is talking to a non-wrestling fan about a very subpar wrestling show and what they took away from it. But that you can learn more about that at the website, howdidthisgetbooked.com. I also have the 5-Minute Podcast, which is 5MinutePod.com. Dad, You Don't Work, You Wrestle, which is available on the High Spots YouTube page. And, of course, always make sure you log on to High Spots. We have a ton of new stuff going up, especially this coming week outside of WrestleCon. Be looking for all the stuff that we got autographed, signed, and filmed. So be checking in regularly at highspots.com.
Phenomenal. Jake, I appreciate you taking your time being on my little podcast. And man, you've been—I got more of an understanding of talking to you than I ever had over and watching any match you've ever had. And you are a very well-rounded individual, Jake. And I wish you nothing but much success in life and your comedy, wrestling, and anything you do, brother.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
All right, man. I appreciate you, man. And hopefully one day we'll have you back on the show another time. You know, and you are great. You are a great guest. I appreciate you, sir.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye now. Interview. I want to thank Jake for coming on the show. That was great. We're going to wind it down for another episode of Nose Country Wrestling Podcast. That was episode number 15 with the Man Scout, Jake Manning. Next week's guest will be, we've got coming up, we're going to have Fireball, Justin Whitaker, next week's guest. And April 19th will be Tim Dixon, followed with April the 26th, Mastodon, Rick Mead. Great wrestlers. These are some going to be very unique and great April coming up through here with some great guests. And I really enjoyed that. I hope people enjoyed it as well. Tune in next week. Until then, for Joey Nuts and Big Country, that's Lost on Sabbatical. It's been another episode, and roll that beautiful bean footage and let's get out of here. I'll see you next week. Same time next week, 8 p.m. every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Call us at 516-387-1469, and we're out of here.